So welcome back to our study of Exodus. We are in chapter 5, and we are going to reread verses 20 and 21 together. And they met Moses and Aaron, they being the elders. They met Moses and Aaron, who stood in the way as they came forth from Pharaoh. And they said unto them, "The Lord look upon you and judge, because you have made our Savior to be abhorred in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in the eyes of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to slay us."
If you remember, these officials have gone to Pharaoh because of the predicament they're in, some of them being beaten because they're not producing the quota of brick that they previously produced when Pharaoh was supplying the straw. And so they're pleading their case and saying, "It's not our fault. I mean, you know, you put more on us than we can handle." And he's not buying into it. He's upset with them. And so the result is, when they leave his presence, they are not happy. And they meet Moses and Aaron on the way. "It's your fault." It's amazing how we always put the blame on someone else, isn't it? They said, "You know, it's your fault. Before you came, we had it good. You know, we were in forced labor, but, you know, you can get comfortable in that." And so they're just saying, "God deal with you, or you making it hard on us." Now, that's pretty tough when you know that God has sent you to deliver the people, and the people he sent you to deliver are upset with you. Now what do you do? Go to the Lord. Mm-hmm. That's what Moses did.
And then they made that statement, "You have put a sword in their hands to kill us."
Thank you. Yeah, that's an idiom. Obviously, he didn't put a literal sword in their hand. But what he's saying is, you guys came in here, and you've upset Pharaoh, and now we're going to die from forced labor or from beating. They just say you put the sword in his hand. Yeah. Okay.
And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, "Lord, wherefore hast thou so evil entreated this people? Why is it that thou hast sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in thy name, he hath done evil to this people. Neither hast thou delivered thy people at all."
So the officials complained to Moses. Moses in turn complains to the Lord. Okay?
Yeah.
"Lord, what in the world is going on? From the time you've sent us here, it's gotten worse." But what did God tell him would happen before he ever went to Egypt?
Yeah.
See, he told him that Pharaoh would harden his heart, be hardened, and wouldn't let him go. And so often we forget the word of the Lord when we get into some bad circumstances. We forget what God said. Rather than to encourage these officials and say, "Listen, you hang in there. God has assured us that you're going to be delivered." But rather they get discouraged. And I'm not faulting them, because all of us have been there, to where when things got to looking bad, we got our eyes off God. Mm. And what we need to learn to do is keep our eyes on him, regardless of how things are looking.
Now in chapter 6, this tells us of God's plan for Israel's release, Moses' instruction to speak to Pharaoh, and the identity of some of Israel's descendants by families, placing emphasis on the tribe of Levi and the lineage of the future priesthood.
Let's say something before you. This chapter, it almost sounds like it's out of place, but it's a parenthetical, really.
Yeah.
And you have to look at it that way. Because here we've got a sequence going. Moses mm-hmm. and Aaron have gone to Egypt, and they met with the elders. The elders have they went to Pharaoh, and then things got worse, and now the officials have come and complained to Moses, and it's sort of like it changes gears. But just understand it's a parenthetical, and this is something else you can see. That in this, the writer can't be Moses. It's someone writing Moses' account. And the context of this reveals that. It just stay with it, okay?
Okay. In verse 1, "Then the Lord said unto Moses, Now shalt thou see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand shall he drive them out of his land."
Okay, so here it opens up. Moses gets his answer from God. God says, "All right, you can see what I can do."
"And God spoke unto Moses and said unto him, I am the Lord. And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of God Almighty, but my name Jehovah was I not known to them."
All right, this is, to me is interesting. He says, you know, to your ancestors, your forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when I appeared to them and talked to them, I introduced myself as El Shaddai, not as Jehovah. Okay? And the interesting thing about Jehovah, the name means self-existent. What other God is self-existent that anybody worships on? The other gods have been fabricated by the imaginations of people. And they find themselves under the influence of demons as they worship gods they fabricated. The God is self-existent. I am who I am. I am Jehovah. No one created me. I'm self-existent, what he's saying here to Moses.
"And I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, wherein they were strangers. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant."
So what you're seeing here is just really a reiteration. And God's just telling He's telling Moses how he had dealt with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, how he promised he's given them the land of Canaan. They were to walk through it, and God would ultimately give it to them. But the interesting thing is, they had left that land. And now they're in Egypt, which God had told Abraham, your descendants are going to be foreigners. He didn't say Egypt per se, but in a foreign land. And they'll be mistreated. In other words, they're going to have to serve these people as slaves. And but God says, "I'm none of this has caught me by surprise. I know it, and I've heard all this going on. I'm good for my word," is the essence of it. "And I'll keep my word to Abraham, Isaac, to Jacob. I'll keep my word." But a lot of times we think God forgets. No, we forget. He doesn't.
"Wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you unto the land concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for a heritage. I am the Lord."
So the Lord gives Moses instructions on what to sell to the descendants of Israel, that he's going to bring them out from under the burdens, out from under this bondage of the Egyptians, and deliver them from a hard labor, and that he'll redeem them with an outstretched arm, a mighty arm. And then not only that, he's going to severely punish the Egyptians. And this is what we overlook. We can see the Egyptians making it hard on the Israelites, but we do not understand that all this is a setup to destroy Egypt. God says, I'll take care of this. I'll severely punish them because of the way they've treated his people. And he said, then you'll know that I'm the Lord your God when I bring you out from under these burdens. I'll bring you out of this slavery. You'll know that I'm God, and I'm going to bring you into the land that I promised to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I'm going to give it to you as a heritage. He said, I, the Lord, will do it. I'll do it. Well, God's good for his word.
And Moses spoke so unto the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage.
So Moses goes to them. They wouldn't pay them any attention. Isn't that something? God sends you to deliver the people, and the people you're sent to deliver won't listen to you.
They were listening to the circumstances. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he will let the children of Israel go out of his land.
So now the Lord tells Moses, now go to Pharaoh. Go to the descendants first, now go to Pharaoh. He goes to the descendants. They have an intolerant spirit with him. And now the Lord's telling him to go to Pharaoh and request that he let these descendants of Israel go from Egypt. And then Moses starts pleading his case.
Mm-hmm. And Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me, who am of uncircumcised lips?
Listen, I went to my own people. They won't pay any attention to me. You think Pharaoh's going to pay any attention to me? That's what he's feeling. And I can understand that. And so he's reluctant to go before Pharaoh. Okay?
And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, and gave them a charge unto the children of Israel and unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt.
So the Lord's not backing off from what he says, right? You emphasize to the Israelites and to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, you emphasize that the Lord has commanded for these descendants to be released from Egypt. You tell the people and you tell Pharaoh. Now, what he's getting ready to do, when I said this is a parenthetical, and pay attention to this, the things that we're getting ready to go through, it's actually a list of the first three sons of Jacob and Leah, or Israel and Leah, however you want to say it. And it shows the leaders of the families of each son, and the leaders of the families of Levi are listed. But there's only three sons. Reuben was the firstborn, Simeon the second, then Levi. Now he stops at Levi because what this writer's doing is bringing the attention to exactly who this Moses and Aaron is. There may be more than one person named Moses, or more than one person named Aaron. And so he gives you a genealogy here, and then he lets you know, this is the one I'm talking about. Okay? Now, Heather has the privilege of reading the genealogy.
I'm just going to go. Is that okay? I'm not going to stop. Once we start, we're not stopping. These be the heads of their fathers' houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, Hanok and Palu, Hezron and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben. And the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Jamin, and Ohad and Jochin and Zoar and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman. These are the families of Simeon. And these are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generations, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. And the sons of Gershon, Libni and Shimni, according to their families. And the sons of Kohath, Amram and Izhar and Hebron and Uzziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. And the sons of Merari, Mahalalel, Mushi, these are the families of Levi according to their generations. And Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife, and she bare him Aaron and Moses, and the years of the life of Amram were 137 years.
Now, let me give you a break here.
Okay.
Remember, the law is not in existence yet. There's a lot of people say, well, you know, here he violated the law. He married his father's sister. No, there's no law in existence. You have to keep that in perspective, okay? Where there's no law, there's no transgression.
Right. Verse 21. And the sons of Izhar, Korah, and Nepheg, and Zikri, and the sons of Uzziel, Mishael, and Elzathan, and Zithri, and Aaron took him Elisheba, the daughter of Aminadab, sister of Nashon, to wife, and she bare him Nadab, and Abihu, and Eleazar, and Ithamar. And the sons of Korah, Asher, and Elkanah, and Abiasaph, these are the families of the Korahites. And I think I mispronounced that. That's okay. And Eleazar, Aaron's son, took him one of the daughters of Putiel to wife, and she bore him Phinehas. These are the heads of the fathers of the Levites according to their families.
Now, this is what you need to understand about this genealogy. These people that are named are family leaders, or we could say tribal leaders, however you want to say it. And so they're influential leaders, okay? You heard the name Korah, right? And Kohath, a different one, okay? That's all. That's what this writer who's documenting this is letting you know. These influential leaders of these people, and then he gets down to Levi, okay?
Okay. Verse 26. These are the Aaron and Moses to whom the Lord said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their armies.
So he's saying that Aaron and Moses, as previously mentioned, these are the ones to whom God spoke and commanded them to deliver the descendants of Israel from the land of Egypt, tribe for tribe, okay? And then these men are the same ones who spoke to Pharaoh about letting the descendants of Israel leave Egypt. Okay? You see why I said this was a parenthetical? Okay. And so this writer is wanting to make sure that we understand who this Moses and who this Aaron really is. Okay?
And it came to pass on the day when the Lord spoke unto Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, I am the Lord. Speak you unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say unto you.
So this is taking you all the way back to the first encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when God asked Moses about going to Egypt to speak to Pharaoh, Moses immediately just responds, you know, I'm not a convincing speaker. Now, I've heard different things taught about Moses and people talking about him having a speech impediment or stuttering. There's nothing that indicates that. As a matter of fact, what we do find is he was well learned. You understand? He was an educated man. The thing was, he was not one who communicated well. Have you ever seen people that knew a lot, but they couldn't communicate to you? They didn't have what they felt was adequate vocabulary, or they weren't confident in their speaking to other people. Heather and I were talking about this earlier today. I said, well, I can absolutely relate to what he means here, you know, that I'm not a convincing speaker. I'm not a good speaker. Man, I would have told you that in a red hot second, you know. I mean, why in the world would God call me? I don't understand that, because, you know, I was a person, you wouldn't believe how shy that I was growing up, and all the way through high school and all this. I was a very shy person, a person who stayed to myself for the most part. I would not give an old book report. And so I can understand where he's coming from, but I don't see that he had a physical impairment to see where he thinks that, you know, some people are talkers, some people are thinkers or whatever. Some people are great orators. You understand? They have tremendous vocabulary. They can stand up and impress you. When I first went into ministry, I was intimidated because I had a horrible vocabulary and I used all the wrong words. You understand? I mean, the neighborhood I grew up in, you know, ain't was just a common word, you know. And if you said anything else, they'd think you crazy. And so, you know, thanks to James, she got some stuff out of me and reprogrammed me a little bit. And I'm still not an authority on English or anything of that nature. But thank God we don't talk like we used to. But here's the point of all that, is God is not looking at your inadequacies. God is wanting you to depend on Him. Those who are self-sufficient and depend upon themselves are not relying on God. They think, I can do this. I can make the presentation. And I'm telling you, that wasn't me. I mean, your knees knocking and your stomach in a knot and all that because of your inadequacies. But it's amazing that when you step forward in obedience, how those things went away. And as you start yielding to the Lord starts speaking through you. And I struggled with that for months. As a pastor, I struggled with that for months. I contemplated getting in the car and leaving rather than going to the pulpit. You understand? I didn't figure I was a convincing speaker. And the bottom line, my track record shows I wasn't too convincing. Because I sure wasn't following the teaching. I'll let that go.
Yeah. Well, this came about, we're getting ready to read in this last verse here, about that phrase, uncircumcised lips. I thought, it wasn't making sense to me. I didn't have a revelation of it. And the way it was explained to me made so much sense, and you helped me. But in essence, the people who were uncircumcised from the Israelites' perspectives, the Hebrews, they were undesirable. You know, it was,
as the old saying goes, they looked down their nose at them. You know, they, you're
lesser than
us. You know, there's that superiority attitude. Okay.
And so that's what he was saying. My speech is lesser than. It's undesirable. That helped me today. You guys might not have needed that. But
you think about this, and this will give you a little insight. We're dealing with diplomats. In other words, he's asking Moses, I want you to go in and I want you to speak to the diplomats, the number one in the nation. Now remember, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's house in his earlier years, right? And so he had some insight into vocabulary and other things and protocol and all that. And he said, I'm not prepared to do that. You understand? He did not see himself as one who could communicate with a diplomat. That's where that's coming from, I think.
Yeah.
So I couldn't imagine me today have an audience with a leader of a nation. I'd have to do a lot of praying and saying, God, you're going to have to help me. I'll be making a fool out of myself. I just don't have that kind of confidence, you understand?
And Moses said before the Lord, Behold, I am of uncircumcised lips, and how shall Pharaoh hearken unto me?
So, God made the mouth, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, what does he say? You got a brother that can talk.
Mm-hmm.
I had a brother that could talk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, bottom line is, the talker's not the one God spoke to. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He said, all right, Moses, you're going to be God. Like God, not God. You're going to be like God to Pharaoh. And your brother Aaron is going to be like your prophet. You inspire him. You tell him what to say. I'll talk to you. You talk to Aaron. I'm not talking to Aaron. I'm talking to you. You tell Aaron what I say. Then in turn, Aaron is going to speak to Pharaoh. What is prophecy? Speaking by inspiration. Right? So who's inspiring Aaron? Moses. Who's inspiring Moses? God. I'll let you think about that.
Let me point out a test question, if I may. Moses acted as a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron acted as Moses' prophet. Aaron is the answer that we're looking for, and that just reiterates what Pete was saying in the first two verses of chapter 7.
You know, God's already told Moses that he's going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Now, here's what we miss. God said, I'm going to harden his heart. People say, well, that's not fair. Listen, God in his foreknowledge knows the outcome before it ever happens. God knew Pharaoh's heart in the first place. God hardens his heart so he can pass his judgments on the nation of Egypt. You with me? And so, don't think of this in a wrong way, that God is unfair and God is unjust. Who are you to second guess your Creator? God says, no, I'm going to show the signs, I'm going to show the miracles. I want you to think about this. Just the fact of our teaching this tonight will give you some insight. God said, this won't be just for the Israelites to see. This message is going to continue from one generation to another generation, from one country to another country, one nationality to another nationality. You and I know about this signs and miracles that God did in Egypt today, don't we?
Yes.
What's God doing? God's making a name for himself. And I think most of us can remember that part, right? God did this, God did that, God did this into Egypt until he put so much pressure on them by devastating the land that they got to the point, get out of here. That just shows you the power of God. Are you with me?
Yeah.
We haven't even got to the plagues yet, and they're just still talking about this, okay? In, let me just say this. In Genesis 15, and verses 13 and 14, God has already told Abraham that his descendants would be foreigners or strangers in a land that wasn't theirs, and they're going to serve these people. And here's the thing. They will be afflicted 400 years.
Yeah.
So there's already a time period set on it before they ever go into Egypt. Okay? And he says that that nation whom they were serving, whom they're slaves to, he said, I'm going to judge them. In other words, they're not going to get by with what they're doing. And when I judge them, Abraham's descendants are going to come out, note this, with great substance.
Yeah.
That's something to just keep in the back of your mind. And so the hardening of Pharaoh's heart wasn't something sadistic that God did. Okay? It was God's way of judging Egypt for the way they had treated the descendants of Israel. And the plagues that came upon the Egyptians were actually God's punishment to them for what they had done to his people. Okay? Keep all that in perspective.
Okay. In verse 4 of chapter 7, but Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them.
Now, these things that God's telling Moses, this is, he's told him to go talk to Pharaoh, and Moses is saying, you know, my people won't listen. He won't. And so God is telling him those things before he ever goes in to speak to Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so the Lord told him, he said, Pharaoh's not going to listen to you. And I'm going to use his rebellion against him. I'll use it as a means of punishing Egypt. And then that way I can deliver the people, the descendants of Israel, out of the land of Egypt. So he assured Moses that the Egyptians would know that the God of Israel is the Lord. He said, when I stretch my hand out over this land, over Egypt, they're going to know who God is. And the descendants of Israel will be delivered as a result of it.
Here's a test question for you that you're going to want to remember. Moses knew beforehand that Pharaoh would oppose the release of the children of Israel. Moses, that's your key. So verses 6 and 7. And Moses and Aaron did as the Lord commanded them, so did they. And Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh.
So Moses and Aaron, note, God's telling Moses what to do, but Moses is going to tell Aaron what to do as far as speaking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so Moses and Aaron, they obey the Lord. They do what he tells them to do. And then he says, all right, at this time, Moses was 80 years old. How old was he when he fled Egypt the first time? He was 40 years old. So that means that he spent 40 years in preparation before he goes, as he's eligible to deliver to people, right? Aaron, it says, is 83 years old. So Aaron is older than Moses. And if you think about this, their sister Miriam evidently was the oldest because she was the one standing by the riverbank to see what was going to happen to Moses. and she was old enough to communicate with them and to get a nursemaid for that baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just giving you a little idea of the age of them when they went in to deliver. A lot of times we think that you do everything when you're young, and that's when you mess up a lot of stuff, just your inexperience. But God is using seasoned people, mature people, to get the job done. You understand? Just like Joshua served Moses for many years, but by the time he was placed leader, he was mature enough to go in and take the territory. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Time's up, so we'll stop here and take our break.
Okay.